Chapter 8. All three of us hustled out onto the paved drive and then turned as Kalara's carriage slowed down to a stop. Behind us, the massive golden doors of the duchy slammed open, and Edeni stepped out. I glanced over my shoulder at her, and my eyes widened at how beautiful the blonde aristocrat looked. The duchess held her crooked cane loosely in her hand, took a languid step down a stair, and then tilted her head toward the newly arrived carriage. The duchess wore a tight-fitting white dress with thin blue lines down the fabric. The sleeves came down to her elbows, ballooned out with an enormous amount of lace, and had a large royal blue bow. I could tell from the shape of her waist that it was tightly cinched in a corset, and the back of her dress lifted with the aid of a bustle. The neckline of her dress plunged down and revealed the pale, fleshy tops of her breasts, and a golden necklace rested in the middle of them. Edeni's almost colorless blonde hair was teased and then combed down into a large, round bouffant. Stray curls framed her beautiful face, and a single ringlet rested on her right shoulder. Light pink rouge dusted across her angular cheeks, making her look younger and more innocent than usual. I'd always thought she was a beautiful woman, but looking at her now, she was radiant. Her sharp violet eyes sparkled in the bright morning sunlight, and a genuine smile spread across her plump lips. I'd never seen her like this, and it honestly was pretty shocking. Most of the time when I met Edeni in the past, her face always looked a bit pinched, as if she were always in a sour mood. But she looked totally different now. I wasn't sure if it had anything to do with me or if it were merely an act she was putting on for Kalara.
"Edeni looks gorgeous,"
Daisy whispered.
"I don't think I've ever seen her look this pretty before."
"I was thinking the same thing,"
Josephine nodded.
"Her skin is glowing, and her eyes are sparkling so brightly. What have you done to her, Charles?"
"I haven't done anything. I read somewhere in an ancient book that when a woman is loved well, she blossoms. But I haven't done anything to create this change with Edeni."
"She thinks she feels your love. Imagine what she'll look like when you change her into one of your women and you do love her. She will be beyond radiant."
Edeni didn't speak to us and kept her eyes hard on the carriage. The stagecoach bypassed ours, maneuvered around it, and stopped directly in front of the stairs. All three of us climbed a little closer to the Duchess on the stairs and then waited for Kalara. The carriage door slammed open, smacked against the side of the wagon with a loud crack, and a brown, bare foot shot out.
"My goodness, what is she wearing?"
Kalara stepped out of the carriage wearing barely any clothes at all. But that wasn't surprising, considering what she wore the last time we saw her publicly. The assumed spy wore the same cloth turban from before, with a single turquoise curl rested against her forehead. She wore a cream-colored cloth over her breasts that came up around her back, covered her nipples, and wrapped around her neck like a choker. A single ruby hung from the makeshift necklace, and it glowed in the morning sunlight. The loincloth from before was gone, and this time she wore a strange tangle of woven rope over her womanhood. The article of clothing was held together by two metal chain links and rested against her pointed hip bones. I'd forgotten how rail-thin and boyish Kalara's body was, but the turban-wearing woman marched forward confidently. Her body was taut with ropey muscle, but she was so incredibly small that she almost looked like a lost child among a crowd of fully grown adults.
"Edeni,"
Kalara boomed.
"You look astonishing, absolutely breathtaking. You seem to sparkle and glow in the morning sun."
"Hello, Kalara,"
the Duchess snapped.
"How lovely to see you."
Kalara completely ignored the three of us on the stairs, swept past us, and then gripped Edeni's hand in hers. The turban-clad woman kissed the back of it, reached over her head with tensed fingers, and then brought it down to over the back of Edeni's hand.
"I pray to the moon gods that this day is a blessing to you,"
the turban-wearing woman shouted, fell to her knees, and lowered her face closer to the stones at the Duchess's feet.
"I know for sure that they have blessed me because I see such a dazzling vision of you."
I know nothing about the moon gods, or any other gods for that matter, but thank you for your sincere compliments.
You look as if Celestia has fallen from the heavens and graced us with her presence. I am in awe of you every time we meet.
Again, Clara, I have no idea who these moon gods you speak of are, but thank you for comparing me to them.
She gets more and more eccentric every time we see her, and we've only ever seen her 2 times.
I assume you know our guests, Josephine de Rossi, Daisy Browning, and her consort, famous and lettered Dr. Charles Rayburn.
Actually,
the brunette interrupted,
Charles is a courtesan now. He services both Josephine and me.
Oh, I had no idea. How wonderful! You brought new capital practices with you when you moved.
I'm sure that it won't be a problem with you and Charles's work. He's merely a tool and toy for Josephine and I, so we won't butt into what the two of you do together.
Oh!
Killara gasped.
You're working with Charles Rayburn again, Duchess. How wonderful. I've heard of the alchemist's brilliance from quite a few ladies in the city.
Killara's hateful scarlet eyes rested on me for a second. Her lips puckered, and then she turned back toward the Duchess.
I do hope that he can help you. I love to hear about what you want him to build, or the experiments you're wanting to do. Does this mean you fired Lucian? Not that I care. He was a sniveling weasel of a brute, and I'm glad he's gone. You shouldn't surround yourself with too many of the male beasts, Your Highness. They will taint your mind and muddle your thoughts. I even heard that they would distort your beliefs and bring you over to their side. How revolting! I know I've told you this before, Edony, but the purest form of love comes from another woman. And that is why I'm here to offer myself up to you. I may not be a scientist, or a doctor, or even an alchemist. I'm sure whatever you receive from Charles Rayburn, I can give it to you tenfold. If you chose me to be your consort, I would love you with all of my being and listen to everything you say, including your deepest, darkest secrets.
I glanced out of the corner of my eyes at the Duchess, and Edony glared down at Killara with disdain. The blonde aristocrat's lips curled down at the corners, but just as suddenly, her expression broke and Edony grinned. The Duchess clasped her hands to her chest, giggled loudly, and then gestured toward the still-open door.
Why don't we all go inside? My chefs have prepared 3 different types of exotic teas and an arrangement of fruits and macaroons for sampling. I'd love for all of us to sit down and get to know each other a bit better.
Of course, my lady.
Killara bowed her head, rose up from the ground, and stepped toward the door.
Though I would have been a bit more skeptical about accepting your invitation if I'd known that the others would be here too.
Oh, I'm sorry, Killara.
Josephine apologized.
We all were just so excited to get to know you better. It must have slipped Edony's mind while writing the invitation. You know, because she is the Duchess and is very busy with other important matters.
I don't mind that you're here.
Killara snarked.
But I would have liked to be informed, especially since there's a brute in our midst. You never know what he might do when provoked.
Killara?
Edony hissed.
I will tell you this just once, so listen. I've worked with Charles for a very long time. He may be a brute, but he's one of the few beasts that I trust with my life. If you cannot accept that he is here and will be joining us for the duration of our visit, I will kindly ask you to leave. I understand your fear of brutes, but Charles hasn't done anything to you, nor anyone else in Edenheart. I know that you've waited for a personal audience with me for a very long time, but if you're going to behave like this, you will have to return to your quarters. Treat my more humble manservants how you wish, but I will not allow you to treat Charles this way. He's under my patronage, which means he is under my protection. And I will not allow you to act like this in front of the other aristocrats or me. Charles may be a man and a brute, but he's earned respect in this city as an accomplished scientist and doctor. Ask any of the other aristocrats. They regard him highly, as do I.
Kilara took a long inhale, squared her shoulders, but didn't fight against the Duchess. The turban-wearing woman nodded once, rested her closed fists on her prominent hip bones, and turned toward the Duchess.
Well, you can regard him however you like,
the turban woman muttered.
But to me, he is still a rotten pig-dog brute. Anyway, my darling moon goddess, may I use your powder room? The ride over was a bit dusty, and I'd like to freshen up.
Of course.
Edeny hissed and snapped her fingers at a footman by the door.
Show Miss Kilara to the powder room.
Yes, mistress,
the servant barked, nodded, and then led Kilara inside.
This way, Miss Kilara.
Edeny paused for a second, shook her head, and then turned toward the three of us with an annoyed expression. The Duchess made sure that Kilara wasn't within earshot and rested a gentle hand on my shoulder.
I apologize for the way she spoke to you,
Edeny breathed.
You know how I feel about you.
It's all right. Nothing I haven't heard before. I'm honestly just surprised that she brought it up so openly in front of you. Any other aristocrat would have accepted that I was here and wouldn't have said anything.
Maybe she isn't as afraid of me as all the other nobles are. If she is the spy, she has the queen behind her, and the monarchy will protect her no matter what I do to her.
That is true, but I doubt that this early in the game she would do any of that. She still needs to squeeze information out of you. We all saw how she desperately tried to get information out of you just a few moments ago. If she is the spy, she has to get something from you to take back to the queen.
She practically pleaded with you to tell her your secrets. She's been here for, what, a week?
Barely that.
Josephine shook her head.
She arrived the day before my masquerade, and that's been 4 days?
It seems so long ago. It feels as if that happened years ago.
We should go inside,
Edeny urged.
Who knows what she's doing in there, all alone?
All three of us nodded, and then followed after Edeny. No matter how many times I'd been to the Duchy, I was amazed by how enormous the interior was. As we entered the foyer, the ceiling opened up into a large dome shape with a single chandelier heavy with sparkling crystals and gold. The two twin staircases swept up the other side of the room and met on the second floor to create a large landing. Huge paintings hung from all walls, some of them landscapes, but as we moved down a short hall, all of them were of blonde aristocrats. I'd never been in this wing of the house before, thus I'd never seen the portraits, but all of them were the spitting image of the Duchess. Just like before in the Hall of Portraits in Delphine's Manor, I was struck by their resemblance, and I stood in front of Edeny's mother's painting for a second. Each of the women had the same striking violet eyes and colorless white hair, but their face shapes varied from woman to woman. Unlike Delphine's portraits, each of these had the older Duchess and her daughter included. In Edeny's mother's painting, the older woman stood, and the much younger Duchess sat below her.
That's my mother,
Edeny breathed, stood by my shoulder, and leaned her head back.
The previous Duchess.
She was beautiful. You look so much like her.
As I've gotten older, I do. But when I was younger, I looked more like the consort my mother bred with. I met him once. It was a strange interaction that I will never forget.
You met him? That's insane. Most children never meet the man who bred with their mothers.
What was the word they were called long ago? Oh, yes, fathers. I have a lot of old books from Olvia, and a few of them mention fathers. Would I even consider him as a father? I didn't know him, and I doubt he's even still alive out there. Even if he is, he's probably retired from the breeding program and moved into a superannuated consort's commune. I guess that word has lost its meaning when men became obsolete in the aristocrats' world. I often like to daydream about what it would be like to have a father. I wasn't unhappy with just my mother, but what would it be like to have two parents? Useless little daydreams, but they're still entertaining.
When you have a child, will she be added to your portrait?
I can only assume so. Though I've had no success in conceiving yet. I was pregnant once, but it died within my womb a few short weeks later. If it was a girl, I would have had my heir. That was the only child that I ever carried to full term, and after that, my body became a tomb to the unborn.
You've miscarried?
A few times. At first I thought it was issues with my consorts, but now I think it's something to do with my own body.
I'm sure that once you go through the experiment, it will heal whatever is wrong with your womb, and you'll be able to carry children.
Do you really think so, Charles? I'll be able to finally produce an heir?
Yes. One of the aristocrats I used for the experiment had a pretty bad injury, and when she came out, it healed itself. I don't know about your womb, but there is hope.
Yes. There is hope for me in the continuation of my line. And with you here, Charles, I will breed with a man I care for. I hope that one day our daughter will be added to this portrait. Maybe you too. But I'm still unsure about that.
Is Ovia in this wing? I asked, turned my head, and gazed down the long line of portraits. I'd love to see what she looked like.
She was stunning.
Edeny breathed, and then gestured down the hall.
Here, I'll show you.
I followed after Edeny for a moment until we reached the end of the hall, and then the Duchess pointed to a single portrait. I heard Daisy, Josephine, and Kalara's voices in the distance, but I couldn't make out what they were saying. I leaned my head back and stared up at the enormous portrait for quite a long time. Ovia looked to be about in her early 20s with white hair and sharp violet eyes, but her face was softer than Edeny's. Ovia looked kind, but also sly and cunning at the same time. The blonde woman was seated in a high-backed chair with a young girl resting in her lap, and behind them stood a tall, dark-haired man. I assume that's your ancestor's husband? I remember you said that by the time she'd reached her full potential, he'd become more of a servant than a husband.
Yes, that was Alistair. When I look at him, I feel this strange sense that he was the first man who ever came into this world. It doesn't make sense, but when I look into his eyes, it's as if he were the sole creator of the entire race of males that roam the earth. I know that's not true, but he was one of the first brutes that became obsolete and faded into nothing. There are no more portraits of my ancestors with their husbands, because after Olvia, no aristocrat married ever again. Maybe except for me, but you've accepted your position, haven't you? You know that you're lower than me, and your mission in life is to serve me, don't you?
Yes, my love, I lied. You are a goddess to me, and I will love you until the end of time. I accept my position willingly because I love you and want to see you happy, and also because being your consort is the highest position I could aspire to attain in society.
Good. Come now. I'm sure everyone is waiting patiently for us.
Of course, my love. Let's see what we can get out of Kalara while she's here.
I doubt we'll be able to get anything. I bet Valerie is finding far more than we ever will.
Well, probably. But we'll see her soon and hear everything she has to say. Edeny swept away from me and stepped into the open door at the end of the hall. I followed after her and stood in the doorway for a second as I took in everything around me. As I said before, I hadn't been in this wing of the manor, and it was nothing like I had expected. When people talked about the Duchess's estate, I thought of a place that was more like a battlement than a home, but this room was bathed in baby pinks, pastel blues, and creamy whites. Long white drapes hung down from the ceiling, and sheer curtains drifted in the morning breeze from the open window. Arrangements of flowers rested in the golden vases on every surface, and in the middle of the room, Josephine and Daisy sat at a table overflowing with food. I glanced around the room for Kalara, and finally found the odd woman as she leaned against the fireplace. The turban-wearing woman hadn't noticed when we entered the room, reached for a small golden box resting on the ledge of the fireplace, and lifted the lid with the tip of her pointer finger. Josephine and Daisy spoke pointedly together, but I could tell from the way they peeked out of the corners of their eyes, they kept a close watch on the tattooed woman. Edeny stood at the table with her arms crossed over her chest, and then cleared her throat loudly. Killara jumped, giggled, and then hastily stepped away from the fireplace with her hands held behind her back.
"Sorry to keep you waiting,"
the Duchess smiled.
"I gave Charles a small history lesson on my ancestors. I'm sure all of you saw the portraits hanging out in the hall."
"Yes, of course,"
Josephine nodded.
"They're all so beautiful. You look so much like your mother, Edeny."
"Thank you. That's what Charles was saying. My mother did many great things for the city of Edenheart, and I can only hope to be as great as her."
"I doubt that,"
Killara sang, and all eyes turned to stare at her out of shock.
"Excuse me?"
The Duchess's voice lowered heatedly.
"What is that supposed to mean?"
"I'm sorry. I meant to say that I'm sure that you will surpass her in greatness. You strive for the betterment of Edenheart, and I believe we will watch it grow into a mighty stronghold."
"Yes,"
Edeny snapped.
"I'm sure with my guidance it will. Now, let's all sit down and drink our tea before it gets cold. As I said before, my chef's prepared 3 different types of exotic teas that I'm excited for all of you to try."
I hurried forward, grabbed the back of an open chair, and pulled it out for Edeny. The Duchess bowed her head with flushed cheeks and then slipped into it. I sat down beside her and grabbed one of the porcelain teapots on the table.
"That one is Darjeeling, known for its delicately sweet flavors and its slight astringent finish."
"Would you like this one?" I asked.
"Oh, no, thank you."
Edeny smiled and then pointed to a different teapot.
"That one, please."
"What's this one?" I asked as I poured.
"Ah, yes. That's Chagan Lumbini, named after the area of the East where the ingredients are picked. It's a dark tea with hints of plum, wild ackee, and rambutan. All of those fruits are rare to the area where the tea is made, so this tea is very expensive. And I only drink it on special occasions."
I tipped my hand and poured the dark tea into the Duchess's cup. Sweet scents swirled upward with a puff of steam, and I breathed it in deeply. I stared down at the purple-tinted liquid for a moment and wondered how many men had toiled so that the Duchess could enjoy this beverage. How many men had broke their backs out in the fields in the hot sun just for this fleeting moment of Edeny's happiness. It was almost sickening to think about it, and I hastily pushed it from my mind.
"What about this one?"
Daisy asked.
"That's Sri Morta Blood Orange. It's very sweet with hints of cocoa and an undertone of peppermint."
"That sounds delicious,"
Josephine whispered.
"I'll have that."
"There's also an assortment of macaroons, if you would like to have some of those while we drink our tea and chat."
Daisy glanced at the enormous box of small, fluffy-looking cookies and then reached for a golden one. The brunette bit into it, and her eyes immediately rolled back in her head.
"Good?"
the Duchess asked.
"I believe that one is honey-flavored, with a buttercream icing in the center."
"Honey, my favorite."
So, Killara," I uttered, poured my tea, and took a tentative sip of the steaming liquid. "We heard that you're from the capital, but is that where you were born?" The turban-wearing woman glared at me over the tabletop, but plastered a wide, fake smile over her thin lips. She held her teacup loosely between her fingers, but from the way they tensed, I knew she really didn't like me directly addressing her this way.
"My family is from the West,"
Killara explained.
"From a small city directly in the middle of the desert."
"A teakem? I've heard of that city."
"I wouldn't even consider it a city. More of a barren wasteland with a cluster of tents."
One of the other aristocrats told me they have flying bison out there. Is that true?
Yes. They're the only export there, and the people who raise them make fortunes.
What did you do there, then? If the only export was flying bison?
Well, for generations, my family has been employed by the...
Killara started, and then forced herself to stop. The turban-wearing woman's mouth hung open for a long second, and then she snapped it shut. Her scarlet eyes slammed down to the steaming tea in her cup, and she stayed silent.
Employed by... who?
Edeny giggled.
I'd love to know more about your history and how you found yourself in my city.
The mayor of the city employed us, a woman of the name Esme Yishak. We raised the flying bison for her and took care of them until the time they were sold off to buyers.
How lovely. But how did you come to Edenheart?
Oh, I was unhappy with my life in Etikem, so I went to the capital first.
And what did you do there?
I initially went to build a new life for myself outside of my small town. But the more time I spent there, I saw how badly consorts treat their mistresses. All of the aristocrats there were unhappy, and I could see that their consorts weren't meeting their needs. I made it my personal mission to become a consort and remove the aristocrats from the horrible brutes. Over 3 years, I became the most sought-after consort in the capital.
That didn't answer my question. If you had it so good in the capital, why did you decide to come to Edenheart? Sure, there are plenty of consorts and prostitutes in the city, but our nobles aren't nearly as wealthy as those in the city.
Your Highness?
Killara bowed her head.
If I could speak plainly...
You may. Go right ahead.
I wouldn't say that the aristocrats tired of me. In fact, they begged me to stay. But let's just say that I grew tired of them. I left the capital because I had the wealth and prestige I needed. But I was bored. I'd grown tired of the capital, and as an expert in my field, I know I'm better suited elsewhere. The women of Edenheart need me, and they need to experience true pleasure for the first time in their lives. I'm sure that plenty of the aristocrats in the city have copulated with brutes, and none of them have been with a woman. But once they've seen my skills, they will never go back. To this day, I still receive letters from my admirers in the capital, and they beg me to return home to their beds.
And you refuse them?
Daisy asked.
Of course. As I said before, the women of Edenheart need me, and I've already received a few customers. I'm sure by the end of this year, I'll be a regular courtesan just like Charles Rayburn. Though I can bet my skills are far better than his, and every woman that lays herself down in my bed will be screaming in ecstasy.
Daisy glared over the table at Killara while Josephine's cheeks sucked in. Edeny seemed totally unbothered except for a single raised eyebrow. The Duchess breathed in deeply, clicked her tongue, and took a long sip of her tea.
Did you ever meet the Queen while you were in the capital?
Josephine asked.
I visited a few times, and she graced me with her presence. But I'm sure it was merely because the coal from my mines powers a lot of the homes in the capital.
Killara's face showed no emotion at all. Not even a shift of a muscle, and the tattooed woman stared across the table at the heiress for a long time. It was already clear to me that she was the spy without having to see the evidence Valerie found. Every time I looked at her, I felt the same strange sensation I had while we were in the black market. If she wasn't the spy, then she was definitely suspicious in some other way.
No,
the tattooed woman grunted.
I never met the Queen. Why would I? I'm a female consort.
I'm sure if you have connections to all of the highest-ranking aristocrats,
Edeny sighed,
then you must have at least seen her in public. We all know that you've met the Queen. Come on, tell us all the juicy secrets.
I've never met the Queen,
Killara repeated.
You can tell us,
Daisy assured.
We just want to know what she's like.
You're a Browning, aren't you?
The turban-wearing woman snapped.
I'm sure that such an upstanding, high-ranking family such as yours had the Queen over for tea multiple times during the week.
I only met the Queen once.
The brunette shrugged.
I wouldn't even consider it an introduction, since she was at my debut party, and I only saw her from a distance. Come now, Kalara. I'm sure the Queen wouldn't mind if you told us a little bit about your relationship.
As I said...
The tattooed woman grumbled.
I have never met the Queen.
You said you were in the capital for over 3 years.
Edeny shrugged.
I'm sure throughout that time, you must have come into contact with her. As you said before, you serviced only the wealthiest, most well-connected aristocrats in the capital.
I said I never met her.
Kilara stood up from her chair and screamed.
I have no connection to the Queen. I've never seen her or spoken to her.
The room fell silent, and the ticking hands of the clock on the wall sounded like small bombs going off. Kilara panted angrily, held her curled fists at her waist, and stood at the table as if she were about to flip it.
Oh, so you say.
Edeny whispered over the rim of her teacup and then took a deep drink.
But how are we to know?
What was that?
Kilara snapped.
What are you suggesting, Edeny?
I'm not suggesting anything.
The blonde aristocrat shook her head.
I simply find it difficult to believe that you spent all of those years in the capital servicing wealthy aristocrats and never came into contact with the Queen.
Well, I didn't,
the turban-wearing woman uttered.
I never met her, or even saw her while I was in the capital.
Then I am very sorry that we accused you of something else.
Edeny smiled sweetly.
Why don't you sit back down and drink the rest of your tea? I'd rather not ruin this meeting by hot tempers and arguments.
Suddenly, the tattooed woman lifted her face, took a deep inhale, brushed off her hands, and calmly sat back down. The turban-wearing woman leaned back in her chair, lifted her teacup, and slurped down the rest of the beverage. We all sat in silence as she reached for the tea kettle and poured herself a second drink.
I'm very sorry I reacted that way,
Kilara murmured.
I seem to have a short temper.
Don't mention it,
the Duchess condescended.
It is already forgotten.
Kilara,
Daisy prompted,
you have fascinating tattoos. I don't think I've ever seen a woman with them. Tell me, do they have any meaning other than just to look pretty?
No, they have a very special meaning to me. Every one of them.
Ah, how interesting,
Edeny commented.
But they're in a different language. And the runes, are they runes?
Yes, the words are written in the native language of Atikam.
But those runes, they do look a lot like black magic symbols, don't they?
Black magic? No, they are protection symbols from my homeland.
No, I don't think so. I've dealt with the dark arts a bit in my life. And that one there, on the crease of your elbow? It looks like the unicursal hexagram. I know that it is used heavily in the dark arts for incantations and protection spells.
No, no, no.
The tattooed woman shook her head.
It's a five-petaled lotus flower. It's native to Atikam.
Oh, the unicursal hexagram is often called a five-petaled flower. It's the very same thing. I don't care if you're involved with the dark arts, Kilara. I simply thought it was interesting that you have these symbols tattooed on your body.
So, you've been involved with black magic before? I had no idea, Your Highness.
Oh, haven't all matriarchs dabbled a little bit in the dark arts? I know that my mother did once or twice, and so did all of her ancestors.
What did you use it for?
Now, that's none of your business. I'll keep that secret until the day I die.
Oh, you must have done something heinous.
Aren't all matters of black magic heinous?
The blonde aristocrat asked back.
Does it really matter if I'd had business with black magic? I'm not the one with runes tattooed into my skin.
A flash of color caught my attention out the window, and I stared out of the crepe-like curtains for a second. I figured it must have been a passing bird, and glanced away until I saw it out of the corner of my eye for the second time. I stared at it this time and ignored the continuing conversation around me. The flash came again, but I finally realized it wasn't a bird, but instead a flash of ash-blonde hair. Under the chatter of conversation around me, I heard a soft voice grunting and struggling. Suddenly, Valerie climbed onto the balcony just outside of the windows, glanced around, and then scurried to the glass. The feline woman squinted her eyes, peered in, and grinned once she spotted me. The cat girl jumped up and down, waved excitedly, and then gestured frantically toward the front door. Her expression fell once her eyes landed on Killara, and the ash blonde scurried over the edge of the balcony. I wasn't sure what the cat girl had found at Killara's house, but she seemed to be very excited about it.